From beyond the grave, we are back. A little weird now. I just have to mention that the recording says we're recording for a minute, even though it should be 10 seconds. But regardless, we're back. Or irregardless. Sorry, weird segue there. Do you hear that they added irregardless to the dictionary now?
Irregardless. That's when you show no regard to the irrigation of your garden segment of your apartment block.
Maybe. That makes far more sense. Because I always used irregardless as a benchmark for when I knew people basically didn't know what the fuck they were talking about,
you know. So basically not to be associated with this podcast, though.
Of course not. This is the Gaming Guru podcast. Colin or Webster's dictionary aside, and I added Colin in there for some reason, and we are back. It's been a long gap. I think maybe we need to explain what happened. I don't know if you've noticed, there's been this massive virus thing going on, and so I guess from my side, we ran for the hills of Port Elizabeth when we heard the schools were closing, because, you know, well, I don't know how to look after a four-year-old 24 hours a day for 100 days. So I went to my mom and dad's house with the kiddo, and we spent the time in PE, but of course I did not expect it to be 100 days, and so my recording equipment there. And so call it laziness, call it lack of preparedness, call it what you will. The Gaming Guru podcast has been on hold for 100 days.
And we can. I think it's safe to call it pandemic.
At this point.
You know, whenever I do something wacky these days, and I try to apologize to my partner about it, whether it's, you know, binge eating like four chocolate bars in a row, or just like smashing a liter of juice in like 10 minutes, I'm like, oh, babe, I feel so bad, and she's like, dude, it's pandemic, like there's no rules, just fucking do it, bro.
Yeah, so it's weird space though, between the whole like people who are super productive and then people who use 2020 as excuse to like be their worst version of themselves. You know, it's like kind of self-love 2020, like, you know, it's a pandemic, you gotta look after yourself. That's, you know, why I do no exercise and, you know, basically no work, because, you know, you gotta self-love, you gotta look after yourself, man.
Totally. And for me, this period has been one of like a lot of growth, and been very productive. My workload kind of exploded as soon as lockdown happened. Got a bunch more clients on, everyone trying to online their stuff, and a big drive towards video. Started my own company. I'm getting back into music. Kind of pushing out in lots of directions.
Awesome, man.
Playing lots of games.
Yeah, playing games too. For myself, I've just been tinkering on the book. It's pretty much done, and then I sent it to a professional writing analysis person, and they're like, yeah, it's good, there's some things you need to work on, here's an 18-page document on recommendations. I'm like, oh god, okay, so it's not done, and so I'm back on that grind. But I'm stoked to be back in Joburg, stoked to have internet working again, and that my kid is back in school, thank god.
Beautiful.
I love my child. But yeah, it's also been a super exciting time games-wise. Let's catch up on what you've been playing. You said you've been jamming quite a bit. What's been taking up the gaming time?
So yeah, I got a bit of a list over here of things that I kind of played in the last few months. We sort of got a bit of a backlog going from March. I got into Thronebreaker, which is kind of that Witcher Tales. I found it on special. It's sort of like a Gwent campaign game. I really like the RPG elements. I like the characters, the interactions, and I think the direction that that CD Projekt like took with it just goes to show like what they can do even with a small budget. You know, it reminded me a lot of like one of those click through or like page through RPGs. You know, like the choose your own adventure things, particularly the way that the dialogue scenes happen. And although it's not like the most exciting of games, I did find the puzzles generally that are kind of put together with the Gwent cards that you collect as you meet new characters. I found those to be quite challenging and nice brain teasers, actually. I didn't think it was going to be like that as difficult as I found it. It was definitely like left me puzzled for a time. And then for something completely different, I went back to, I downloaded Sonic Mania, which is
Just free,
got an interesting story. Yes, Yeah, it's a new Sonic game, but it's been designed by the M2 guys who kind of made a name for themselves by porting these old Sonic okay. games, and they got hired by Sega to basically develop a new Sonic game in 2D, and that's what they did. And okay. it's arguably one of the best like 2D Sonic games out there. I mean, like, if you look at the catalog, you know, going way back to, like, you know, Sonic 1, 2, 3, what have you, Sonic and Knuckles. Yeah, this one's great. It's got some of the kind of most famous old levels yeah. that they've kind of augmented a bit, and they've added new levels with new mechanics and stuff. So there's a bit of cool old nostalgia, a bit of new stuff all kind of slammed together with like a couple new characters and abilities. And it was such a blast. I had such a great time. Then there was a new Path of Exile League that launched. I played that for a couple of weeks. Generally, my playtime with Path of Exile has kind of plummeted because there have been so many great, great games. So I didn't play that for too long. Just jumped on for about a week or two with some of my mates in Joburg. And I spent a lot of time playing Control and more recently Dragon Age. Control was fantastic.
Yeah, definite game of the year. I know it was nominated, but like definitely deserving nominee, I felt.
100%. On the other side of the spectrum, I spent way too much time playing Dragon Age Inquisition. Like, and it's a bit embarrassing to say, because like it's like an old game. It's like, you know, there are way better games to play, but something about the way that it's been like set up just kind of like hits my button for, you know, I can be like a compulsive player where, like, you know, I want to get all the best armor or the best weapons and like do all these other things before I do that. So I ended up spending like somewhere close to like 90 to 100 hours in Dragon Age Inquisition, even though the game was annoying a lot of the time. And I found a lot of the systems didn't make sense. And yeah, I was complaining about it the whole way.
Dragon Age. I
was complaining the whole way, and I just didn't put it down. Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with
this. Is terrible. But I'm addicted. Things
like that sometimes. I don't know if you've had that sometimes, where it's a game that's clearly average, but like you just need to put a lot of time into it.
Like Dota.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Human beings that I suffered through playing the game with.
Yeah, so then on the other side of the coin, once I was done with Dragon Age Inquisition, I like as soon as I saw the credits roll, I just deleted it. I'm like, thank God that's gone. Even though I mean I enjoyed it, I had a good time. It was a flawed experience, but whatever. For something completely different in between these games, I was jumping in and out of Telltale's The Walking Dead.
Because I played
seasons 1 and 2 before.
Okay.
And it was on special recently, like the definitive edition. So it's, I think, all 4 seasons for like a one-time only fee or whatever that comes around once every 3 months. So I've been jumping into that, finished season 2. So all the material that I've already seen, I've played now. And so all that I have left is the unseen material. So we're going to get to that. And then after all the Sonic Mania was happening,
damn son, you were busy.
I just got right. I wanted to have more Sega stuff, and so I went and bought a Genesis Mini. And I've been playing a lot of like Sega games.
Okay.
A lot of like old retro 16-bit Sega games. Just getting back into it. I'm just hyped that like I have this machine in my life and I can turn to it whenever I want. That and it's a big hit when our friends over for Bri's, they're going just, although not many of those during COVID, but and then more recently I just started playing Prey again, so I never finished my first playthrough, so I'd give it a proper go.
The new Prey,
the Bethesda release was 2018, really enjoying that. Digging the controls, I'm finding like a little bit jank, but that's only because I think I'm playing on PS4 and it seems like the game was designed for PC. I feel like it would be a way smoother experience on PC. So I'm just kind of put the difficulty down to PC and
If I remember playing Prey, I also played on PS4. I think some of the issue was you interact with a lot of like consoles and stuff, but on a very specific level, like pressing a button in the bottom right-hand corner of a monitor or something. And while it's super easy with a mouse, it's far more difficult, you know, given the lack of accuracy on the controllers. Yeah.
For me, like the turn rate and like the motion blur is like, particularly when you're in combat, it's like, where's this enemy? It's on my left, it's behind me, I'm spinning around, I cannot aim for shit. I'm like, where's the aim assist? Fuck. So I'm not really like going too deep into the technicals of the game. I'm just kind of putting on an easy, letting the experience have
the story.
Space exploration story and
Story's dope. I really enjoy the story.
Jeez, man, I
expected you to like say one or two games, because that's been my experience. Because back in PE, I did thankfully take my PlayStation and my Switch, so I'm jamming some Animal Crossing to keep me sane with the 4-year-old, and then had the PlayStation. So I was lucky enough to get an early copy of The Last of Us. So I played that, you know, slow and steadily, did like an hour or two every day. So, you know, it being a 30-hour experience was a nice like 2 weeks of my lockdown was that. Otherwise, just a fuck ton of Hearthstone. Just been playing that a hell of a lot. Got to my highest rank ever, which was Diamond 1, just short of Legend. So hopefully I can break that soon. And then otherwise just surviving, really. You know, just trying to get through day by day. So feeling like a alcoholic's thing, you know, literally just day by day. 100 days passed, and then now we are back here, and it's good to be back, and it's good to have proper internet to download games, because that was the other thing. I've been sending these review codes, but like on my janky like in-laws and parents' internet. It was one of those like, cool, I got the code and it'll be ready in 10 days. That was a bit painful. But the one thing that was a super highlight over the last 100 days, and I think for a lot of people, was the PlayStation 5 event. And I'd love to just talk about, you know, obviously this is a catch up, you know, let people know that we're back and you know what's going on, and hope they enjoy our new home on Anchor FM. But now looking forward to the rest of the year, cannot believe we're in quarter three of 2020. It is ridiculous. How both fast and slow this year's gone. But now I'm looking forward to the end of the year. First of all, we know what the PlayStation 5 looks like, which was rad.
So sexy, fucking curvy.
So you're on the pro side.
All the right places. Oh, it's gorgeous. I mean, one of the last podcasts, the last episode that we have for listeners, if they're going through our backlog, the last episode of season one was like, you know, has Sony bungled the launch of you know, the PS5? It looked like in a funk. And then, you know, what did we say? We were like, they just got to bring the games.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
That's all they have to do.
They bought some fucking games. I was like watching this thing, and every trailer that it was like, I don't know, the presentation didn't feel as like kind of flashy or. You know, or much of a spectacle as you'd expect from, let's say, like an E3 reveal, where the lights go down, the lasers come up,
and orchestra is playing,
and fucking Keanu Reeves just like that comes out and, you know, tells us how beautiful we all are. And but so it was very, it felt like it had this very clinical vibe to it, like someone just threw all these trailers into like a playlist on like VLC and like clicked go. And as modest as the presentation was, I was just blown away by everything I saw. It was like middle of the night, everyone is sleeping, and I was yelling downstairs.
It kicked off at like 10:30 or something, like, you know, reasonably late for most South African weekday nights, you know. And the games just kept coming. I was chatting to friends on WhatsApp while this was all going on, and there was this moment about half an hour in where I'm like, they could literally stop now and they have my money. Like, they don't have to announce a single game from that point. And then it just kept going, like, for an hour and a half. And then it didn't end with one big, like, wanky, these are the price and the specs, whatever. It's just like, cool, this is what it looks like. And then the stream ended. It's like, oh,
yeah,
cool.
and even that, like, that physical reveal of the machine itself. They're like, they dragged it out and drew it out so much. It's like, I just had like such blue balls at that point. I'm like, fuck, give it to me. Oh God, no, it was so cool. And then like they showed it and then they just kept showing it. I'm like, oh, please never take it away. Never take it away.
So what are you most excited, if I had to say, out of all the reveal, and I think there were like 24 games announced, what would be your like, let's go top three. If I really gun to your head, day one purchase, top three.
Gun to my head, day one purchase, I'd say definitely the first one that I latched onto was Horizon Forbidden West.
Yeah,
just cool. Because you know we've been waiting for, you know, something from Guerrilla about, you know, their sequel for a while now, and they've kept pretty tight-lipped about it. And it's cool, looks like a total continuation of the story. We saw some familiar faces, characters, and just expanding on the world, on these characters, on these stories, and just still one of my favorite combat systems of any PS4 game. Just love the way it felt, love these huge fights with these crazy mechanical animals, and you just see a lot more of that from them. So definitely Horizon Forbidden West was a big one for me. Second one that just really like tugged on my heartstrings and made my eyeballs jump out was the announcement of Oddworld Soulstorm. And I know like it might be a case of, you know, will the game actually like live up to its hype? You know, is it going to be just like a nostalgia cash grab? I don't care. I fucking loved Abe's Odyssey. I've played it a couple times on other devices throughout the years. And I'm just keen to see this IP, like just getting a bit of love and getting some new treatment, you know, some new blood. So those two, I'd say the kind of last one that really stuck out to me was one of these new ones. Returnal looked cool.
Oh yeah, you got me.
I don't know that much about it. It's kind of like this one of these roguelike type sci-fi vibe. Like just all the imagery just like pushed all the right buttons for me, and I was like, yes please, fuck yeah, let's do it.
So definite overlap for me with Returnal. When I saw that, I was like, this looks amazing. Definitely am keen to see more on that one. The other one, and argue probably my number one, was Resident Evil Village.
It was one of those
when the images are playing and you don't even know what it's called, you're just like, this looks amazing. I want to play this. And then when it gives the, and it's just called Village, you're like, cool, Village, I want it. That is the game I want. And then Resident Evil goes on top of you, like, oh my God, from one of my best franchises, 100% want to play this. Then it was like adding layer and layer and layer of all the stuff I love. If they had just said, there will be a new Resident Evil game, I would have been like, rad, I want that game. The fact that it like, they didn't even have to put that name on, they just showed the visuals and it was like, well, gothic as fuck, and like the world looked epic, and I love the first person element when they switched it in by in Resident Evil, not the remakes, but the latest new Resident Evil. I love the first person thing, and that's going to be continued, so definite pre-order or whatever to get that game. I will say the other one I'm super excited for is Demon's Souls. I've been a Souls fan for a long time, but only post my first excursion was Bloodborne, and then I played Dark Souls 3, and then I played 2, and then I played the 1 remake. But I haven't played Demon's Souls because, unfortunately, when I tried it, the quality of life improvements that they have made from Demon's Souls through the Dark Souls series into Bloodborne and Sekiro make Demon's Souls basically only a nostalgia trip for those who had done it in the past. Yeah. You know what I mean? If you played all the better games and now you go play that, you're like, this is garbage. I mean, it's like, you know, if you played Diablo 3 and you're told that Diablo 2 is a better game, but you played it now, you'd be like, yeah, cool, the story's better and some of the mechanics are better, but like the quality of life improvements they've made in Diablo 3 make Diablo 2 worse if you hadn't played it before. I mean, you watch some of those cutscenes, they look terrible, the pixelated graphics, all that. You know, it's fine when you got nostalgia because, you know, you're playing Sonic again, your rose-colored spectacles kick in and you remember those pixels fondly. You know, you can't go back now having tasted, you know, better. and go as if it's the first time you're playing it. Yeah, so excited to finally play it, see what all the hype was about. Even, you know, the, I don't know if it's the gatekeepers to Soulsborne sort of games go, you know, it is the best. Is it really, or is it just one of those, like, you know, guys who follow indie bands? Oh, it's not as good as the original stuff. No, the original stuff was garbage. That's why they weren't signed.
Yeah, well, they sound like pieces. So commercial now. Like, exactly. They used to be more authentic.
100%. Oh, you mean they sound good now? That's why they sell records. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, like, I think I remember watching a friend play Demon's Souls, like, years ago, and thinking, Demon's Souls, what a shit name. Like, who came up with that? it's like, where's the originality? That doesn't sound cool at all. And he's like, you know, this game's hardcore, man. I was like, yeah, fuck, yeah, whatever. Get it. Demon Souls.
Yeah.
And what for me, it's one of the most, like, I have to, like, set the scene here for this one, because this one was, I found, like, both endearing and hilarious and brazen. No, it was the first trailer for the PS5 reveal, you know, and GTA, like, the camera opens up on, like, on the city of, you know, wherever they are. Yeah. And it's like, GTA 5 coming soon to PS5. I guess we know you like GTA 5, so put some GTA 5
fives in your five. Fucking, yeah.
Some five,
like,
in
a
your
big
five.
Troll, because the first thing you see, like, literally PlayStation event starts, Rockstar logo, and you're like, no way.
Whoa.
Are we getting GTA 6? No way. Is that what they're opening?
What?
Holy
now?
Shit.
What?
And then they show these five like montage stuff. You're like, okay, cool. They're like building the story. Like, where's it gonna kick off? Right. And you're like, oh no, it's the same game. It's just, it's for free if you buy a PlayStation 5. It's like, yay.
Enhanced
cool.
edition.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but fuck.
But you get like a bajillion dollars and something, and the game free when you buy your PlayStation 5.
That game still has so much resale value. Like, if you have a copy of GTA 5 lying around with all your other PS4 games and you put them all on Gumtree or Facebook Marketplace, the only one that sells is GTA 5.
Yeah. And you said you had it, like, you finished it and you tried to put it online, and like within a day it sold.
Yeah, I was gone in like 5 minutes.
Jeez. Get like, Jackass Russell Puppies, man.
Yeah.
The other game I have to say I'm looking forward to, it's not in my top three, but it certainly got my interest, is Deathloop. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes.
It was like assassin type game, but at the same time, you're trying to fight other assassins who are trying to kill you and also your target, which is super interesting. So it's like, I mean, it's the guys who did it's Bethesda and I believe Arkane Studios. So it's the same guys who did, what's that game? I just can't think about it. I think of it now. Dishonored, yeah, the Dishonored series. You can see it in the art style.
Arkane Studios, right?
I think so. Well, it's Bethesda, isn't it? So
yeah, no, I think it is Arkane. I was just about to say.
It totally had that.
Because I remember there being like one Arkane Studios game that was announced. And I think, yeah, it was a death loop.
Yeah, and so you, and it had that same sort of art style and all that. But I think what's great is they've taken their creds and their ability they've shown before in kind of stealth action games, like in Dishonored. And now adding this mechanic of going, cool, you're under the clock. Not only do you have to do it faster than the other assassins, but you also have to worry about the other assassins killing you. So yeah, interesting. Didn't show enough to fully understand how the mechanic works, but it definitely was.
Is it like, is it a multiplayer game?
I'm not sure.
Is it like a single player experience?
They didn't explain. Like, I'm not sure if it's multiplayer or if it's one of those, how would you call it, like ghost multiplayer, like a like Dark Souls, you know, where right. It's not that the character is actually playing right now. Sometimes it's their, like, their spirit or whatever invading your game. So if they've got an X level character, whatever, it invades your game, you know, to try and stop you or whatever. So yeah, interesting concept, definitely keen to see more. And then there were a lot of games that didn't really show enough to get, you know, like, looked pretty but didn't excite me enough. So
yes,
Hitman 3, for example, loved Hitman 2. If they go on that, like, open worldy, you know, kill your target any way you can type thing, would love it. But like, all they really did was go, it's Hitman 3, here's some screenshots from Dubai. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah,
really didn't know enough
ray tracing.
So, Yeah, and then the same with like Stray. It's like, humans are dead, there are robots, you're a cat, Stray. Okay, cool, like, don't know enough to like, I'm interested, but like, don't know enough for it to make the highly coveted Gareth Woods top three list, you know?
Yes, there were a couple of those. I think another one that did, another reveal that was also kind of like weird like that was Dragon Age Inquisition 4. I think I remember being a little, like a quick little teaser for that, and it was literally just some screenshots of environments.
Oh yeah?
Screenshots of environments and some developers saying like, we're really excited, PlayStation 5. So this is the thing, like it was a weird mix of like really out there in your face trailers and then also some kind of mystical, obscure, suggestive pieces kind of that punctuated it in between that, but like the whole time my heart rate was like way up. I was just so hyped for everything coming through. Even the screenshots from some of these games, I'm like, fuck, yo, looks so good.
Yeah.
Just creepy, it looked so good.
But to be fair, how many times have we been, I wouldn't say burned, but kind of like, about reveal trailers versus gameplay trailers?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like, reveal trailers are really just like, you know, here's a fully CG, you know, video of what the game could look like from a concept point of view. It's not the same as when you start seeing gameplay and, you know, how
like
the game actually plays out.
Yeah. And I mean, we know enough now about game development and these presentations to know that, you know, while they're still working on the game with their A team, they've got another whole team that's busy working on the playthrough demo trailer for E3 in a year. So 100%. Like working side by side, which, you know, which is kind of like a scripted event in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, remember as a classic example of that, the totally not scripted playthrough that the guys did of Anthem, when the guy's like, oh my word, I just got this new armor. Oh my word, well done.
Oh,
like,
so it's good, wow.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, so we'll wait to see some real stuff come out. But I mean, let's talk about the PlayStation itself, because obviously, you know, we still don't know the price. The speculation is it's going to be about $600, so like 12 grand at least, you know, South African price, so in rands. And, you know, I was reaching out to my followers on Twitter and kind of asking, you know, is that enough? Or have they shown enough to warrant that price? And to be honest, while people are in love with it, they are going that anything over 10K is probably too expensive for day one.
Too much, yeah.
Your thoughts?
No, I agree. And I also had this discussion with a couple of peeps in my group, you know, because we're all thinking, you know, they like to position this product as, you know, something you can get your kid for Christmas or can be gifted as a Christmas present. People going in on like $500-$600 for a Christmas present is a lot, you know.
Yeah,
I was chatting to friends about, you know, joking about maybe like splitting it and then we can like, you know, take turns being like all egalitarian about that shit. And although that does sound nice, it's quite impractical. So I wouldn't be surprised if to see Sony kind of pull back and run like a loss on the price and then kind of make up their money with games and bundles and promotions later on down the product's life cycle.
Yeah, I was also interested to find out if they will do, you know, how sometimes there's a price point, you know, they'll do their research in terms of what, you know, what is a reasonable price point in each market. And so you might have a situation where they go, hey, in a third world market, you know, if we are really wanting to get an install base, they might go, we can't cross 10 grand. That might be one of those things going like, so we, you know, only sell it in bundles. So like, you know, we hit 12 grand, but it comes with games because we know we can't, you know, sell a console, a bare bones console for over 10 or whatever. So it'll be interesting. I know that's not often the case because with the global market, the way it is, people will buy via an Amazon or something and just import it themselves if they can't get the right price point. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think personally for myself, it's anything over 10 is also just too much to warrant the day one purchase.
Yeah, same. I also feel that way. It's kind of like a wait and see sort of game at the moment.
Yeah, I think the one thing for me is like being given copies of games to review. It might unfortunately be one of those bugbear purchases where you like you buy it so that you can continue to get the latest games as samples, because as much as my friends, you know, at Sony have been great in giving games, that I've never been given a console, you know, to review on.
Yeah,
I think it's a little bit too much to ask, and so, you know, you buy the console to still be able to have access to the latest content. Yes. Because a lot of these games coming out, although they will be on both, a lot of them will be PS5 exclusives. I'm not sure which the first ones are, because, you know, we haven't been given details yet, because I feel for a while a lot of these will release on both.
Yeah. What I want to know is, so they revealed kind of two versions of this console. There was a disc, one with a disc drive and one without. And I could see there'd probably be like, you know, a price disparity. So if, let's say, the kind of the full disc version is going for like $600, and then the, you know, you have the discless version for like $550 or $520.
Yeah, I expect it to be about a $50 difference. If we use the, I think it's the difference between the Xbox One X has a discless and a disc version.
What is your sort of take on like a discless console? I know we've like spoken about this, you know, previously, but in the context of like a discless gaming world, you know, we're very much still in a world where discs are going around. People like to have their boxes. You know, I can borrow a game from a mate, play it, give it back to him, sell it again to make my money back on that game. Like, with that kind of in that factor in place, you know, having this cheaper product, does that make it seem more desirable to you? Or do you feel as though like that purchase might just limit your options?
I think it really depends on how you consume games. So for example, myself, I find it hugely convenient going digital, because it's the kind of thing of like, I mean, if I just take, for example, traveling to PE, I took my console and my hard drive, got about these 20 games on the hard drive, maybe 5 or 6 on the computers, on the actual PS4 hard drive. And then, you know, because kiddo was there, just went onto my library, downloaded some more kiddie friendly games. But it wasn't like, now I'm packaging these discs that I've got to carry around and worry about getting scratched and all that. And also the amount of times where I was going through my library and going, oh, Rad, I could totally want to play that game. God of War, for example. I wanted to play God of War with my wife while I was there, and, you know, take it through the story and all that. And then realized, oh shit, my God of War copy is on disc back in Joburg. Uh-huh. And so like it was on special for like 120 Rand or whatever, but like if it was digital, I wouldn't have to worry about that. So I'm a big fan of digital from that point of view, not even from like the hippie green thing of like, you know, let's not produce any more plastic, all that, like the recycling, all that. But I get that if you are the kind of person that is maybe on more of a budget, and so being able to pick up, you know, a game secondhand and then, you know, play it, sell it on to a friend, or like do a swap, you know, between 4 friends, each one of them buys a game and they kind of all just like have a go, you get 4 times the amount of game for one, whereas if you bought digital, you wouldn't. Of course, the one potential answer to that is it Epic or Steam that does the whole thing where like you can literally sell your game and then it's removed from your library? So you can buy the game, you can sell it on to someone. Steam obviously takes their rake from that sale, so they make a little bit of cash back. But then it's like, cool, you now no longer own this game, someone else owns your copy, and you know, have X amount in Steam credit to go buy a different game. And so like that for me answers a lot of the secondhand thing. I do think that as much as there are people who are still using discs, I think that in the long run, this is what the developers need to be able to cut out retail.
Yeah.
Is you're waiting for, you know, you're waiting for the console that goes, there is no disc drive, but we're still like doing it. If you want it, you can have it. But like, we're trying to sell the benefits of going discless, because look at all the specials we want digitally on the PlayStation Store and the Xbox Store and all that. And, you know, it's super way more convenient for digital, but it also starts putting more money in the pockets of the developers, because they make, I believe, far much more margin through digital than they do through going traditional trade, because there's the production cost, distribution, you know, all the losses, the insurance, and I mean, heck, in the previous like non-digital world, like there were situations where like a game can go out of stock. You know, you go to your store, that's where pre-orders like were a legit thing. I used to honestly pre-order games often, because living in my dusty corner of you know, the tip of Africa, if not enough people ordered the game, they legitimately would not bring the game into the country. So like there needed to be like at least maybe 1,000 people in the country who were going to pre-order the game. Otherwise you had to go via an Amazon or a digital distribution or something. So whereas now it's just you just go, oh, screw it. If they don't have copies at my local store, just download it, you know, and with internet being the speeds that it are, like, you know, it's a couple of minutes. You don't even have to get in your car and drive to a shop.
So then I guess they would do like if you had to do like a bundle deal for like a diskless machine, then they'll probably just give like a PSN kind of card or
which is how codes or something. When I bought my Xbox One, it came with like 4 pieces of cardboard that had different download codes on for, I think the games were like Rise and Forza and all that sort of stuff, like the typical Xbox launch titles. And it was literally like, go on the store, here's your code, here's your game, like no sweat.
So I guess another big sort of like selling point for me on the PS4 is like true backwards compatibility. And I guess with that, like I've now, you know, I've got my own little collection slash library of physical discs that's collecting dust, because I haven't put them back into my machine in, you know, God knows how long, and I'm seem to be collecting them for like future generations, who knows why. But they're there, and for me, do you think Sony would be looking into releasing like an external disc drive, or those much like a thing of the past? Like you either get the disc version or you get the non-disc version.
Oh, I hear you. I mean, right now they have PS4 drives. I'm actually staring at mine right now. But it's, I'm interested in how backwards compatibility works from like a USB drive point of view. Could I plug in this hard drive that's in front of me into my PlayStation 5 and still play my PS4 games via hard drive? Or are they just saying that the disc versions, how it's gonna work. Like, are the disc versions backwards compatible? Because I know they've now said this thing that all games being developed from, I'm going to say this point on, but it was a couple of months ago, have to be backwards compatible.
Okay.
So it's a, you know, if you're developing a game for launch PS5 now, I mean, obviously not miles into the future if your game's got a massive timeline, but like all games from this point have to be able to, or no, they need to be upgradable. If you're launching a game from now till the end of, till when the PS5 launches, it needs to be able to be playable on the PlayStation 5 as well.
So if they do manage to actually do this right with like true backwards compatibility, we could see something, we could see some pretty cool stuff, like some opportunities for, like, let's say as an example, like Guerrilla Games could release Horizon Zero Dawn plus Forbidden West's like complete deluxe gold edition, where you play like the first game and the second game from different consoles, you know, generations on your same console, you know. Or you could have a GTA like 1-4 like complete legendary edition, you know, kind of bundle vibe.
Which, as you say, I mean, it might just be I'm building a narrative here, but that might explain the work they've done to port it to PC. Because the PC version of Horizon comes out in August. And so it might be a thing of going, obviously PCs from a tech point of view are closer to the newer generation of consoles that are coming out. And so it's a case of going, all the sexy, the ray tracing and the 4K graphics and all that stuff are built into the PC port. And so it's one of those like making it also available, the tech is there available to do a Horizon Zero Dawn port for PlayStation 5, because all the, you know, the 4K textures and all that are in there, you know, ready to go and upgrade.
100%.
I think what's been interesting as well, sorry, I just want to say is that how many games have already said that, like, basically from this point, if you buy this game for the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, you upgrade to the PlayStation 5 or Series X version free of charge. I know, like, FIFA announced that. I know that the good guys at CD Projekt Red announced that for Cyberpunk. Yes. And I think it's also because they want to protect people considering not buying now because they'd wait for the latest console. You know, because FIFA will launch traditionally like end of September, early October sometimes. We know Cyberpunk has now moved to November, so both pretty damn close. We don't have a date for the PS5, but pretty damn close to when we speculate it will be launching, you know, to be ready for Christmas. And kind of holiday purchase rush. Maybe, you know, just before, just after, like a Black Friday type thing, which is traditionally like, what, second last or last week of November. So, you know, you've got these people who might go, oh, shoot, I don't want to buy the latest FIFA for PlayStation 4 if in a couple of months I'm going to get the PlayStation 5 and I'm on the latest tech and graphics and all that sort of stuff. So I think they're making the right move to go, no, don't worry about it. If you want it on the day it launches, buy it, and it's going to be an auto upgrade. It'll probably be like an update. You'll just put your PS4 disc into your play, into your 5, and there'll be a online update to, you know, make the graphics all PS5 level.
Yeah. So, I mean, from my side, on the whole, I'd say the PS5 reveal was humble, but gave me everything that I needed in that hour from that brand to kind of all my judgment that I was reserving, or, you know, all my any doubts that I had were quite thoroughly kicked out the back door, and now it's just what's left in the wake is just pure hype.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's a case of going, we had obviously created a narrative, or who knows, the community at large created a narrative about Sony being rather quiet while Xbox was just releasing like news piece after news piece, and so kind of felt that they were missing out. But I guess their tactic was just going one fell swoop, get all the games, show the games, don't focus on anything up. They didn't even focus on, like, I want to call it the mumbo jumbo, but the tech speak of, this and so many triangles and billions of, you know, DP dots and all that stuff. You're going, no,
10,000 flip-flops.
Yeah. if you want this many flippers, then this is the best one. Like, it was just, here are the games, you want to play these games, this is the only console you're going to be able to play them. For some of them, obviously, it's a lot were not console exclusive, or they were just timed exclusives that come later to other places. Like, I think the GTA with 5.1, for example, was like a timed exclusive.
I think something also worth mentioning is that kind of the context in which this stream happened. And of course, you know, it was, you know, during lockdown, it was during, you know, COVID-19, where a lot of brands, a lot of businesses are trying to figure out different ways to engage with their audiences. And, you know, since E3 was kind of taken off the table as an option for many people, we've seen these companies turn to live streaming for these events. And Sony actually made a world record, I think, for kind of like the most watched live stream ever. They just had the most viewers.
Something stupid like 11 million people or something were watching. And that was like Twitch alone. I don't know how many as well on like YouTube and direct from PlayStation websites.
I believe the record is from YouTube. So they had some very significant numbers. And that's a lot more eyeballs than you can fit into an arena.
Yeah.
E3.
Yeah, 100%. I think the one thing that an E3 does provide is that usually straight after the press conferences, a lot of the stuff is playable from the media. And then you're getting hands-on feedback from, you know, whatever your favorite outlet or influencer is on their actual experience in the game, which obviously we're missing. I believe Gamescom at this stage is still kind of on track. So we might see something in like late August, but whatever that means. But we still wait for a lot of the stuff to give us proper hands-on stuff. But I just want to jump forward a little bit to some of the other games that were announced outside of the PlayStation 5 reveal. EA had its kind of announcement thing. it was mostly, how would you say it, like the next iteration of its franchises. So we saw a new Madden's coming, a new FIFA's coming, a new season for Apex, all sorts of stuff. The one I was super stoked on was Star Wars Battalions, which was basically like an X-Wing versus TIE Fighter reboot, as it were, being able to play these kind of like 5v5 dogfights, you know, whether you're on the dark side or the Jedi side, and being able to kind
of... It looks like a lot of fun. Yeah. You know, I haven't seen like one of these kind of like dogfight Star Wars games in ages, and I just remember having fond memories of, because there were so many of them at one stage, like in the 90s. They were just coming, you know, from all over the place. And I think that after the Battlefront 2 debacle, they have gone back to the drawing board with this property, which is, I guess, arguably one of their most prized, you know, possessions at the moment. Yeah. And you had like people signing, you know, millions of people signing petitions to have it like removed from them. So, you know, they did a bit of an overhaul of Battlefront 2, which was free on PSN last month, and I jumped into that a bit, and the game's improved a lot. There's actual progression, and I think they learned from their mistakes, or at least they pivoted. Let's keep to the, you know, the corporate speak. They did a bit of a, you know, pivot on their product strategy, and seems to be working. So I hope they stick with that tone, and they give us like a video game that just feels like a video game and not a slot machine, and that'll be awesome.
Yeah, 100%. The other one that certainly has my eyebrows up is the Tony Hawk remaster, or I think it's a remake even. So Tony Hawk 1 and 2, not even arguably, like definitely the pinnacles of the skating genre for me. And so they are basically doing it all again in the best graphics, but we're going to get everything we had in the previous game. So all the skaters you remember from back then, as well as the music from both those games is there. So then they're adding a whole bunch of new stuff. So obviously skaters from kind of nowadays, and obviously a couple of new tunes.
Skating is still a thing. Do people still skate? Do people wear Vans?
Well, based on the kids that lurk around my neighborhood, definitely. Awesome. I think it's certainly lost its in vogue.
Just a bit of a shine. But what I think is really special about this one is you have the same developers working with many of the same people. You have Tony Hawk, the man himself, back on the project with a lot of the original team. And what I think will really make this game kind of stand out from kind of the rest of the PlayStation catalog is that we just haven't had a skating game in years. We haven't had a good skating game for years. So yeah, I'm really keen to kind of jump back into that world and with like the newest technology and just have a blast.
The other one, which was announced shortly after those other two, was the new Crash Bandicoot as well. So it's Crash Bandicoot 4, and I think the subtitle is like It's About Time, because I think they not only are going, well, dear, it's about time, it's been a few decades since we had a new Crash game, but also I think that's the mechanic as well. It's about time travel, and you go back in time and get these essentially four different, let's call it crystals or power-ups or whatever, that allow you to manipulate time in different ways. So whether it's being able to manipulate gravity or being able to mess around with, you know, rewinding, that sort of stuff. So looks fun. They just updated on graphics, all that sort of stuff. So it looks like a new game as opposed to, you know, fresh coat of polish on an old game. So also excited for that. Will be interesting to see how it does. It's always weird with the nostalgia type games. You're going, the remakes they did feeds fully on nostalgia, because a lot of people are like, I want to play this game again and relive some of the moments I did last time. Now this is a case of going, it's a new game. And so a lot of the stuff you might have forgiven in a remake, going, oh, you know, this element's trash, but it was trash in the original, and so we forgive it. Now when you do a new game, there's sometimes this risk of going, let's do what we think Crash people like, because we'll do it like we did in the old games, versus people going, people have progressed to a point where X feature or Y feature is not good enough. Like we've moved past that stage. And so we need to actually provide something new. So it'd be interesting how they go in that from a design philosophy point of view.
Yeah, I was really hoping that, you know, since I knew that like Crash Bandicoot 4 was kind of on the horizon, I thought that maybe Activision would have added the Insane Trilogy for one of this month's like PS Plus downloads. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that happens, you know, I've seen in the past they tend to put like the bundle up. It would have been a nice way to kind of introduce maybe a younger generation who aren't like as familiar with Crash Bandicoot in the way that we are to the franchise and kind of prime them for the new game that's on the way. But alas, not this month, maybe next one.
Yeah. Fair enough. And that's pretty much all the games that are on my radar for the rest of the year. I think the last big-ish games, obviously Last of Us, I think has been its own storm of news, and I think we'll talk about that next week. But
it's getting its own podcast.
Ghost of Tsushima, however you want to pronounce it, probably the next big one that comes out on the 17th. I have been playing that, so I can probably sneak in a
couple
of... You've
been playing Goats of Tsushima?
Yeah, Goats of Tsushima.
Sneaky boy.
The goats, yeah.
The goats, man.
Yeah, so I'll tell you all about, or not all about, but what I'm allowed to say about goats next week. But other than that, it's been great chatting with you, Tim. It's good to be back in the second half of 2020, and with this being season two of the Gaming Guru podcast, we will be back next week. Will not be another 100 days of silence. But as always, if you want to drop us any messages or your thoughts, we're both on Twitter. I'm at the Gareth Woods. Tim is at Tim and a Fish. Otherwise, our Gaming Guru podcast Twitter is Guru_podcast. I always get that wrong. Guru_podcast on Twitter. But yeah, give us your thoughts. Love to chat. And next week, we'll probably be back with some more fish sticks too.
Fish sticks. Love them.
Cool. See you next week, guys. Cheers.